Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. On today's show, we'll visit with the Minnesota National Guard on the recent state duty and get the latest on benefits from the VA Benefit Center. But first, it's time for Generally Speaking, a weekly message from the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Major General John Jensen.
This month marks the beginning of LGBT Pride Month. Over the last decade, our military has moved toward accepting all service members into our ranks, regardless of sexual orientation or gender identity. We're becoming a much more inclusive force, and your Minnesota National Guard exemplifies this. It is important to us as a community-based organization that we reflect the communities we serve, our society, and the cultures that we come from. We are stronger as an organization when we are inclusive and diverse. We must allow anyone who's willing and able to serve their country the opportunity to do so. We cannot deny them their patriotism. We cannot deny them their love of country. As we do with other heritage and cultural recognition months, let us celebrate the contributions that LGBT soldiers and airmen bring to our Minnesota National Guard.
And we have a surprise for you today because we have Major General John Jensen, Minnesota's Adjutant General, with us in person. In addition to his weekly message for us, and General Jensen, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thanks, Tom. I appreciate it. It wasn't that many days ago, and we were live together Memorial Day.
Memorial Day, and who knew that between then and now you'd get almost no sleep, and you'd have to call up a lot of your troops, and it's unfortunate circumstance in the last week, but as a citizen of the state of Minnesota, I feel really energized by the fact that we have a lot of soldiers and airmen that have stepped up and helped to protect people and property and settle things down here in Minnesota.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that, Tom. And I know we're going to spend some time to talk about what the Minnesota National Guard has been doing. But I think it's really important that we just start, where this whole piece starts, and that, really, this is about Mr. George Floyd. This is about his death, and this is about some things that in our country need to change. And because if we don't start with that and recognize that and just talk about the Minnesota National Guard, I think we missed a big piece, because this isn't about the Minnesota National Guard. This is about another tragic event that resulted in Minnesota National Guard happened to do some just absolutely amazing things in a very difficult environment and a very changing environment. But if we don't recognize that the death of Mr. Floyd was the catalyst of this, I think we're missing the bigger part of this as human beings, as Americans, and as Minnesotans.
In general, we all saw what happened there. It's been all the news for the last week, and we saw how the community reacted to that. And of course, you can't look at that without noticing that the demonstration that maybe started out as a demonstration with a few bad actors erupted into a riot and fires and looting. And as the days passed, we got back to the point where they can peacefully protest, and it seems to me, sir, that the difference between a peaceful protest and a riot is just a few bad actors away.
Yeah, I agree with that. There's been a lot of talk about how many of these people are from Minnesota versus from being outside of Minnesota. What we generally know in these situations is that these situations get inflamed by a few people. Few people are able to influence other people to do things that they normally wouldn't do. They are experts at taking someone's anger and turning that towards violence. And it doesn't matter where they're from. Doesn't matter if they're from Minnesota or outside of Minnesota. It's some agitators that are there. And look, people came and they demonstrated for appropriate reason, for very appropriate reason. It's a very quick turn from a peaceful demonstration or a protest to where a few people can turn that immediately into a violent situation.
We're speaking with Minnesota's Adjutant General, Major General John Jensen, on Minnesota Military Radio. General, we've seen a kind of a classic example of how agencies in Minnesota work together to solve problems and to settle things down. We've had the Minneapolis Police Force, the St. Paul Police, we've got the Sheriff, we've got the State Highway Patrol. We even had saw some MnDOT agents or some DNR agents out there. And then, of course, the last agency in, as I heard you say once over the over those days, was the Minnesota National Guard. But you practice all the time in trying to support each other and work together on not only on these issues, but all kinds of issues. And that had to come into play over the course of the last week.
No, it has. And I'll just give you an example. I think I talked about this at one of the press conferences, is that, you know, the weekend before this event took place, we were in six of our communities, to include Minneapolis and St. Paul, conducting community COVID-19 testing. And that was with the Department of Health, the Department of Human Rights, Department of Admin, and other state departments. And then in a couple different days, suddenly we're working with the State Patrol, Department of Public Safety, emergency management departments in both cities, and just another slew of agencies. And so I don't know that we got to all state agencies in the last 2 weeks, but it sure feels like I've gotten to many of them, or most of them.
I think we'd be hard-pressed to find one that you didn't get to, sir.
Yeah.
I'm wondering, I want to, when we come back in the second segment, I want to talk about Friday, Saturday, Sunday and the buildup, but we were talking about the fact of if things go from demonstration to riots and then settle back down to peaceful protest. I wonder over the course of the last week what your thoughts are. When and where did we get to the transition where things started to settle down? And is that just a reflection of everybody trying to work together?
Yeah. In my belief in this environment is that the people that will decide when things are going to escalate or de-escalate many times are just our citizens. And let me give you an example. We all remember that horrific moment when we saw that fuel truck barreling down the interstate, and we saw that and thought, my God, you know, we're about to lose, I don't know, 10 citizens, 20, 30, whatever, and just how horrific that was. And then we saw the reaction of the crowd that was formed there, and their ability to manage that situation in a very decentralized situation. You know, we're lucky in the military, we have a very centralized way that we approach things. But the leadership, the compassion, the empathy that took place on that bridge, I think really changed this whole event, because it wasn't violent, because that driver was allowed to be arrested and brought in instead of you know, God forbid, killed. The restraint of those people on that bridge was amazing, because in their eyes, that truck barreling down the interstate was a weapon. Somebody had brought deadly force focused on them, and their restraint, their leadership, their empathy for that driver, I believe, transitioned this whole environment, and was really a strong message to not just to the people who wanted to demonstrate and protest, but also to the people who were watching this as well. Whether you were in the law enforcement arena or whether you were just sitting on your couch at home and watching this, I think that was the transition point.
It's a vivid, vivid turning point, sir. General, we have to take a short break. When we come back, I'd like to talk to you a little bit about the state activation and how that unfolded over the last few days. We're speaking with Minnesota's Adjutant General, Major General John Jensen, on Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Well, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. We've been speaking with Minnesota's Adjutant General, Major General John Jensen. And, sir, we started out the show. A terrible tragedy happened about a week ago. We lost a gentleman named George Floyd, and in some very, very hard-to-understand circumstances, and things kind of took off, and everybody is trying to deal with how that happened, and for one reason or another, you got thrown right in the middle of it.
Yeah, we did. You know, as we've talked about before, especially when it comes to support to law enforcement, you know, we're really we're not a law enforcement agency. And so, you know, we're typically the last agency in and then the first agency out. But things move by very quickly. I can tell you that my first conversation about using the Guard in support of Minneapolis was on Wednesday of that week. I had a short conversation with Commissioner Harrington. Oh, so that would be Wednesday, I think the 27th of May there. And what we were talking about was the possibility of using the Guard beginning Saturday the 30th. And by the time I woke up Thursday morning, that whole thing had changed. And Thursday morning, we were moving out, alerting our initial units for support of Minneapolis Police Department and St. Paul Police Department.
In general, I'm looking at a press release on Friday, May 29th at 4 o'clock. Governor Walz signed an executive order activating the Minnesota National Guard to provide safety and protection to the people of Minneapolis, St. Paul, and surrounding communities. Now, you indicated you've been talking to him for a few days, but I would guess, sir, that you'd want to try to define the mission. How many troops do I need? What kind of vehicles? What kind of equipment? Do they carry weapons? Probably a lot of questions even before you activated 500 soldiers and airmen.
Yeah, the first step is just contact your soldiers and get the momentum moving. Right, it takes a while for us. You know, I always kid the state patrol about this and say, man, you guys are so easy to deploy because everybody has their own trooper car, everybody has their own trooper radio, and you all have your weapons on you. You just literally text each other, and you can be anywhere. It takes the Army Guard some time to move from being in their homes and their communities to being to their armories and then being to the community. So we actually really started contacting our soldiers on the 27th, the evening, late evening of the 27th, to begin just alerting soldiers, thinking again that we would formalize the alert on the 28th. On the 29th, we would be mobilized, and on the 30th, begin supporting our agencies. But everything got accelerated, so we had to move very fast. And we have every year we designate certain units for domestic operation support. This year it's 151 field artillery from the western part of the state, 257 MP company, and then 114th and the 224th trans company. And then we kind of have on the side, we have the 34th MP company. While they were not directly tasked with the mission, we just know that by their military mission, being military policemen, that this is a role that they could support. And so, we initially identified our two MP companies and then a portion of our ready reaction battalion to come in and support that. And but you're right. So as we begin that movement, simultaneously, we're trying to negotiate what the tasks are going to be, because you want to make sure that you're bringing the right equipment. You know, and for us, it's vehicles. You know, how mobile do we need to be? Because not every unit has a lot of Humvees, for example. Some units have larger trucks, so you want to make sure you get that right, because sometimes you need to be very mobile inside an operations area. Sometimes you can be more static. You don't need a lot of Humvees. What we found in this mission was the ability to maneuver and adjust from a mission to mission over the course of time as the environment was changing. It was critical. So as you're trying to define that, as you're trying to get your tactical tasks, you know, for example, do we need to do operations 24 hours a day, or are they more 12 hours a day? How does that work? And so understanding the environment is very important, and that's part of it.
In general, we see a couple other press releases. Then on Saturday, May 30th, Governor Walz authorized the National Guard to fully activate. And we saw you saying that we're all in for the people of Minnesota, and activated a lot more soldiers. And While I was watching the news on Saturday night, sir, it was evident that backing up the Highway Patrol and backing up the other law enforcement units, that visually it appears that it made a huge difference starting Saturday night.
Yeah, you know, having the governor look at you and say, I'm going to fully mobilize the National Guard. I looked at him and said, sir, do you mean the entire Minnesota National Guard? And he goes, yes. I'm like, okay, sir. And from that order to the guidance I gave the staff, I mean, it's pretty simple, right? When you're all in, it's really simple. I basically said, we're all in. We need to start notifying every single unit, every single soldier, with exceptions. I mean, obviously, soldiers that aren't fully trained aren't going to come to this. Our recruiting battalion wasn't going to be mobilized to come in and do this. But we knew, you know, all in, everybody was coming. They were going to contribute in one shape, form, or fashion, whether that was in Minneapolis, St. Paul, or if they were going to be in a logistical function and role for us. And It was very dynamic. We were able to do some things very quickly. You know, this was the last weekend of the month, and rarely we don't have a lot of units drilling on the last weekend of the month. This month we were very fortunate. We had a couple of our larger units, 2 of the 136 Infantry, for example, were at Camp Ripley already and preparing to drill. And so we were able to turn them very quickly south into the Twin Cities to begin support of the mission here. 9-4 Cav from Duluth was the other one that we were able to, you know, redirect from Camp Ripley. Now, that's good news, bad news. The good news was we were very adaptable at that point. We were very responsive and flexible. The bad news is those soldiers had packed for a drill weekend. They'd packed for 2 days. And suddenly we redeployed them from there. Down south, I think their initial warning order was at 0100 Saturday morning, if I remember right. And so again, while we were able to, I think, really pick up tempo at that point, it was at the cost of some soldier care. Soldiers didn't have t-shirts, underwear, socks, to last for a week of living in an armory. But you know what? Our soldiers did a great job. They worked through those issues. And then, as always happens, Tom, when the guard comes, the community comes. And it was just hours later that, you know, things started arriving at our armories. Once people realized that, hey, my local armory is hosting part of the response for this, I'm going to go support them. And it was just an overflow of support once again.
General, we've only got about a minute and a half or so left, but we've been seeing all week on Facebook, on TV news reports, everywhere, the impact of our citizen soldiers, our National Guard soldiers and airmen out interacting with the peaceful protesters, helping people, guarding stores, helping their fellow Minnesotans get through just a terrible, terrible time.
Yeah, I think what our soldiers and airmen, because I can't forget about the great soldiers from the 148th and the 133rd who, you know, really for the first time in a long time, we used in a state active duty role and just did a great job. I think the one thing our soldiers did and recognized and were able to do as the violence decreased, and as I said, it was no longer about face shields, right, batons and violence, they quickly shifted to the next phase of this, which was engagement, conversation, dialogue, and listening. And they did it faster than anybody. It was just amazing to watch. When you look at, in the matter of, you know, let's just take the 136. The 136 on Friday drove to Camp Ripley. On Saturday, they drove to the Twin Cities. On Saturday night and Sunday night, they were part of some of the worst violence in the history of Minneapolis. On Monday and Tuesday, they were welcoming their citizens. They were trying to clean up the communities. They were doing everything that they could do to support their community. And then by the end of the week, back up to Camp Ripley to drop their equipment off and recover, back home for what is going to be a very short period of time. And so literally, they did an entire deployment in a week. deployed, operated in two very unique conditions of the same environment, redeployed back home. Just amazing to watch, and I'm just so proud to have been part of it.
General, a fantastic demonstration of the fact that the Minnesota National Guard remains prepared to protect life, protect property, and maintain order. And from my viewpoint, sir, you and your troops did a magnificent job this week, and I appreciate you taking time out of a really busy schedule to join us today on Minnesota Military Radio.
Thanks, Tom. I appreciate it. And as I just said, you know, I'm so proud of our citizen soldiers, our citizen airmen. While it was a difficult way to support our community, our soldiers get so much satisfaction and pride to be there for their community. And it was difficult. It was difficult for a lot of people. But we are certainly in a better place today as you and I talk than where we were just a few short days ago. And so once again, you know, to the citizens of Minnesota, your National Guard remains always ready and always there. And there's nothing like the last week to really prove that.
Thank you, sir.
Thanks, Tom.
That was Minnesota's Adjutant General, Major General John Jensen on Minnesota Military Radio. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. In a moment, we're going to visit with Paul Lawrence, who is the Undersecretary for Benefits from the Veterans Benefits Administration. But first, it's time for the Commissioner's Corner, a weekly update from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Now here's Commissioner Larry Herkey.
It was known fondly as the Star-Spangled Banner, red, white, and blue, Old Glory, Stars and Stripes, and the list goes on. The American flag is recognized across our country to far-reaching nations and even second and third world countries. Our flag stands as a beacon to the world, representing independence, liberty, patriotism, and freedom. It is a symbol of enduring hope. Each year, June 14th is recognized as Flag Day. Although this is a little known and even less celebrated day, let's commit to spend some time reflecting on our flag. Although it's just made of cloth, our flag represents all those throughout history who have stood against our enemies, braved unspeakable conditions and sustained injuries. Some gave lives. Even if you don't fly Old Glory every day, I would ask you to do so on June 14th. Fly your flag proudly, with honor and loyalty.
Thank you, Commissioner Herkey. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Dr. Paul Lawrence was nominated by President Trump to serve as the 7th Undersecretary for Benefits for the Veterans Benefit Association and was confirmed by the United States Senate on April 26, 2018. He leads more than 24,000 employees in the Veterans Benefit Administration in the delivery of benefit programs for veterans, including disability compensation, pension and fiduciary, education, home loan guarantee, vocational rehabilitation and employment, life insurance, and the Transition Assistance Program. Dr. Lawrence, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me on. Thanks for your service, and thanks for all you and your team do for veterans.
Well, thank you, sir. It's great to be able to talk to the Undersecretary of Benefits, but before we get into some of those issues, I understand you served in the United States Army.
That's right. I grew up in a military family. My father was a career Army officer. I'm guessing he was a little bit older than you. He served in Korea and Vietnam, and he passed back in 2000. He's buried in Arlington Cemetery. And so the two boys, it was two boys, two girls, the two boys joined the Army through ROTC. So I was commissioned when I graduated from the University of Massachusetts. But I delayed my commitment to go to graduate school. So I served in the early 80s when President Reagan was expanding the military. And then, you know, choice between continuing on or getting out. And the woman who I'd eventually married said, I don't think I want to be, you know, a military spouse. So I decided that was a good time to leave. So, you know, it was great. 3 years I was in, I look fondly back on that experience, and I draw on many of the lessons I learned in the Army in a lot of the things, decisions I have to make and the leadership roles I find myself in.
Dr. Lawrence, I understand you served about 30 years in business and working closely with a lot of federal leaders.
That's right. After I eventually got out and got married, I became a consultant here in Washington, and I ended up working with federal agencies, generally helping them work on things like, you know, improving the efficiency of how the organizations run, what they spend their money on, how they provide essentially benefits to the American citizen.
And, Doctor, can you share with us the story? How did you get to become the 7th Undersecretary of Benefits?
Well, it's sort of an unusual story. It's not unusual. It's not well known. So often people think, you know, you become a political appointee, you're a friend of the president, or you know somebody, you're a big contributor. I was none of the above. When the department became a department, if you recall, under then-President Bush, to make it a department, the top positions, the undersecretaries, were designed so they'd be, you know, bipartisan to go through a commission process, which is really just an interview process. So you actually submit your resume, you apply to a job opening, and then you get interviewed through a series of things. A friend of mine said, hey, this job would, like, you know, a lot of your experience would match. Why don't you send in your resume? He was a good friend, so I said, sure, thinking there would be thousands of people send in resumes. I could at least say I did that. I was called to interview. I explained, you know, sort of my vision, what I would do, my history, and then I was eventually selected and then confirmed by the Senate, as you pointed out. So it's a little unusual journey because it only happens like that within the VA for the top three positions for the undersecretaries of the different administrations.
And, sir, I imagine once that all came to pass, you had to pause for a moment and say, oh, my, I got it. Now what am I going to do?
Well, actually, it's pretty funny, Tom, because in the interview, I actually had a plan for that question. So probably 4 months before, I had the moment where if you're going to go interview and you're going to really consume people's time to consider it, you have to make sure you're real serious and have a plan for what you're going to do. But it's the same moment, only 4 months earlier.
Very good, sir. We're speaking to Dr. Paul Lawrence, who is the 7th Undersecretary for Benefits of the Veterans Benefits Administration on Minnesota Military Radio. Doctor, I understand that before COVID-19, you started on a series of town hall meetings. I'm assuming that was to reach out to veterans and find out, get some input from them on some of the issues.
Exactly. Just before, prior to COVID, I would do regular traveling twice, three times a month. I would go visit our regional offices, like the one in St. Paul, visit with our team, and then also in the non-work hours go to like an American Legion post and hold town halls with veterans to really, you know, help them with their issues, understand what's on their mind, and just engage directly. When we stopped traveling in early March, began to do a series of teletown halls with veterans by state to do essentially the same thing, take their questions, try to work their issues, and quite frankly, listen to veterans to understand what they need from us in terms of communication, or they often call and describe some situation that's gone wrong in our processes. So as a leader, I need to hear about those and figure out how we fix that. So it's been a great experience so far. I've done 19 of these, talked with over 600,000 veterans. So yes, it's been really engaging and quite frankly energizing.
Dr. Lawrence, for our veterans, those are sensitive, very personal and very emotional topics that you're talking about. I hope you're wearing a flak vest and a helmet.
Oh, no. Well, it's funny because, ironic, I guess, because, you know, I do take questions live and I do interact with veterans directly. And so I do have members of our team on the line listening. So when someone says, hey, you know, my claim seems to have some problems, I talk generally about it, but I don't want them exchanging personal information over the phone. So we follow up and try to understand, you know, why is it stuck and what do we need? You're right, about half the time, you know, I get folks who are unhappy with the situation, and rightly so. They're waiting too long or they're confused by our communication. You know, regularly we get compliments about the great service from our hospital or the efficient interaction they had. And a lot are, quite frankly, just questions about what are the benefits available to veterans, how are they earned, and generally, sadly, Tom, folks closer to your age, you know, were told when they came out, you're not a veteran, you don't get benefits, so they're just confused by the whole thing. So really, it's the gamut of different interactions.
Well, Dr. Lawrence, things were a lot different almost 50 years ago when we got back from Vietnam, and most veterans, most of us just wanted to get out of uniform and get on with it, and it wasn't a very good time, and now, of course, we've got the Vietnam veterans have more people suffering from the presumptive diseases from Agent Orange than and unfortunately dying quickly from those things. And times have changed, and we hope that we can take care of as many of those Vietnam veterans as possible before it's too late.
Right. And I think you're aware that the president signed the Blue Water Navy Act last year. So we started granting, benefits and health care to those Vietnam veterans who served within the 12 nautical miles and had certain conditions covered by the presumptive. So at least we're trying to make an effort to close that loop and get that one right. So we got all the ship logs of all the ships that served in the Navy at that time, scanned them in so we can find your ship if it was in the 12 miles. So I'm hoping, I'm trusting that you're encouraging Navy veterans in this period of time, if they have those conditions, to apply for benefits.
Dr. Lawrence, we were telling them to do that a year ago and all last year when there was a delay. And I think a lot of them here in Minnesota, a lot of our Navy brothers and sisters put their claims in, and we were cheering the fact that they were processing them the first of the year this year. And long past due. We were taking care of the Brown Water Navy before, and we're thrilled to see that we're finally taking care of the Blue Water Navy that were impacted by Agent Orange as well.
Yeah, the president's been pretty clear to us in terms of, what we like to call fulfilling this last promise to our Vietnam veterans.
Dr. Lawrence, I have to take a short break. When we come back, I'd like to talk to you about a few other items. We're speaking with Paul Lawrence, the Undersecretary of Benefits for the Veterans Benefits Administration on Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. We've been talking with Dr. Paul Lawrence, who is the 7th Undersecretary of Benefits of the Veterans Benefits Administration. And before we went to the break, we were talking about the fact that we're finally taking care of our Blue Water Navy brothers and sisters, and with regard to their exposure to Agent Orange in Vietnam. And Dr. Lawrence, I know that you may not have a very good answer for me, but we got thousands of Vietnam veterans who have died, and many have been left to endure some negative health consequences from diseases that have been scientifically linked to Agent Orange. And there's four presumptives we've been waiting for that are bladder cancer, hyperthyroidism, Parkinson-like symptoms, and hypertension. And it seems that that's been delayed and is in a constant delay. Can you give us any update, sir, on where the status of that is and whether or not you think we're going to live long enough to see that passed?
Sure. Well, let's be clear for your veterans. At any time, they can apply for benefits, and we evaluate those on a case-by-case basis. But, of course, you're asking about the presumptive. There are four conditions that are still being worked on. We've committed to the Senate just yesterday, as a matter of fact, that there are two additional studies coming that will give us better insight into the science behind it, and then the Secretary will get recommendations from the committee as part of that process to bring forward. So we're working on it. We understand the situation. I know it may feel like a delay intentionally, but it's not. And, we're anxious to get this resolved, too.
Well, Dr. Lawrence, for those of us on the long side of being many decades away from Vietnam, we hope that gets passed quickly. Sir, I wanted to ask you about compensation and pension exams during COVID-19. Everything's changed. I know your town hall meetings are probably suspended. I think you're doing some telephone work. And how are we going about those compensation and pension exams? Are you just waiting for a treatment or a vaccine, or are we able to move forward?
What we are following is the reopening plan, which is somewhat driven by the localities. So last week, we sent out a press release announcing that C&P exams will begin in 20 locations around the country, different cities and geographies, not quite states and the like. But we're also about ready to announce that we're going to start doing exams in three states, Iowa, Michigan, and Utah. And this is related to, the reopening plans and the like. In the interim, so two more parts to your answer. In the interim, we've been trying to do tele-C&P exams, what we can do over the phone or through an internet connection, as well as looking at the veterans' files to get their exams or decide what benefits they're eligible for. We've been granting partial benefits so that we can get some of the issues resolved, but we do know we have to resolve the C&P exams as fast as possible. So for your listeners, as they open up and the C&P exams are restarted, they can expect calls from the vendors to schedule appointments. So please make those. If you can't, you're uncomfortable, you don't want to leave your home, please let us know. We'll try to figure out how we can schedule them. So I'm really glad you asked about that, Tom. We're very anxious to get them restarted so we can continue to process claims all the way through.
Thank you, sir. Dr. Lawrence, as short a period of time as just a few years ago, I know there was an enormous backlog on claims. I think we've caught up to some of that. Can you give us an update on where we are on claims? I'm sure they've been held up by the coronavirus like everything else, but how are we doing on that backlog?
Sure, you're right. In 2013, the backlog of claims was 611,000. And so for your listeners, backlog refers to claims over 125 days old. We were in a very paper-based system with limited technology. All that changed. We're highly automated now, lots of technology. And in November of last year, we hit an all-time VBA low in the backlog of 64,000 claims. So before COVID started on or about April 1st, our backlog was 77,000. But you're exactly right, Tom. Once the C&P exams slow down, we've been limited to what we can do. So our production fell by about half, the ability to grant claims. There just wasn't, evidence was incomplete. And it wasn't just the exams. It was also our access to federal records. As they sent non-essential people home, it was hard to get treatment records and service records and the like. So you're right. As of this morning, the backlog is 119,000, and that simply reflects the growth due to the delays in the C&P exams. But we have a plan. Again, we're highly automated. We're embarrassed by this. We like being in the low numbers we were before and getting our veterans expedited service and getting their claims done quickly and accurately. So we have a plan to get going. A lot of it depends upon the reopening.
We're speaking with Paul Lawrence, who is the Undersecretary of Benefits for the Veterans Benefit Association on Minnesota Military Radio. Doctor, we've just got a couple of minutes left, and I want to just talk to you about the process of applying for veterans benefits. Here on Minnesota Military Radio, we've been telling our veterans for a decade now, go see your county veteran service officer. If you have any issues related to your service in the military, if you've got a medical issue of some kind, they can start the paperwork, start your claim. Some of the veteran service organizations can help you document the claim and get it moving faster. Is there anything you can tell us from your side? What can our veterans do if they have a claim to maybe submit it better and speed up the process?
Sure. Well, you gave them great advice. The service officers at the state level are wonderful partners and collaborators, and they can do exactly as you said. The same thing with the traditional veteran service organization. So they are good. We ask everybody to file electronically. So you can go to va.gov, or their agents can, the groups you described. Filing electronically really gets you expedited service because we don't have to wait for the mail and convert it to electronic and the like. Having all your evidence, if you saw a private doctor, bring that. If you have evidence of your service, bring that. If you have buddy statements or things, bring all that. That's what we depend upon, and that's what a lot of the back and forth with the veteran is, to collect that. So, you know, we are anxious to grant. We need the evidence to do that, and the faster we can get it, hence the electronic filing. But again, you know, we can also help, too, at the VA, and they're welcome to call us at 1-800-827-1000, and we can help them process their claims as well. But you gave them really good advice.
Dr. Lawrence, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Tom. Again, thank you for your service.
That was Dr. Paul Lawrence, the 7th Undersecretary of Benefits for the Veterans Benefit Administration. Joining me now is Director Patrick Kelly from the Minneapolis VA Healthcare Center. Director Kelly, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio.
Tom, it's great to be back. Thanks for having me again.
Director, it's been one of those crazy years, crazier than I can recall. We've had all kinds of things going on, including the coronavirus. You and I have been talking about that and the impact on the Minneapolis VA Medical Center. And of course, the last week or so, we've had a tragedy here in Minnesota and across the country. But I want to get to the Minneapolis VA. Can you give our listeners an update? Has anything changed? Are you still pretty much on lockdown, or are things opening up?
You know, Tom, things are opening up some. So it's going to be a gradual process. So, you know, as it stands now, you know, we have a, you know, we've been seeing patients that couldn't wait, you know, those sort of high priority patients that would not do well if they couldn't get in and get their surgery now and do that. We're going to be doing more surgery. We're going to be doing more face-to-face outpatient visits, but it's going to be gradual And as we do it, it's going to allow us to sort of measure the impact on our personal protective equipment, the impacts on sort of COVID spread and testing and some of those things that we're going to need in order to ensure that we're doing it safely. So it will be more open, but not certainly fully open.
Are we still at the point, sir, if we need to come out to the Minneapolis VA Medical Center, call first?
I would advise that, Tom. You know, it's just a good idea. You know, again, of course, unless you have an emergency or it's an urgent issue, but it's always a good idea, especially for veterans who think they might be having some symptoms. We get that great call center. They're very responsive. They'll get you to a nurse. They'll get you to a doctor if needed, and that's just a lot better than actually driving out here. So that would still be my advice.
Director, one of the side effects of the COVID-19 this year is there are a lot of people filing for unemployment. There's a lot of people out of work, and there's more veterans out of work right now than there have been in years. If someone knows a veteran who's unemployed, perhaps without insurance or health care, do you have any recommendation for them? Or are there any options at the VA?
Yeah, Tom, you hit on a really important issue. So I would say two things. You know, one, every veteran, every one of your listeners should know who their county veteran service officer is. You know, they are the experts in eligibility and enrollment and benefits. And so every county in our state, all 87 counties, has a county veteran service officer. Most of them have many. So get to know your county veteran service officer. I think your listeners can just look it up, you know, whether it's part of their county government. Or a couple of phone numbers, 1-877-222-VETS, V-E-T-S, to get the national enrollment and eligibility number. Or locally here at the medical center, 612-467-2109. Either one of those two numbers can help veterans to sort of figure out better what they're eligible for, if they're eligible, what they have to do. But again, it's always a good idea for veterans and your listeners to get to know their county veteran service officer. They're really experts and very helpful.
Director, we just got a few seconds left. Last time we talked about hiring some nurses and doctors. Some of those have been laid off too. Are you making any progress there?
Some progress, Tom, but I'm going to give them better information. www.usajobs.gov. That's where you can go and look very specifically at what jobs are available, to include those doctors and nurses and pharmacists and all others. So thank you for mentioning that. We are still hiring.
All right, Director. It's always good to talk to you, and I want to thank you for visiting with us again today.
Thank you very much, Tom.
That was Director Pat Kelly from the Minneapolis VA Healthcare System. We're just about out of time. Thanks for listening to this edition of Minnesota Military Radio. I'd like to thank our guests for joining us this week, Dr. Paul Lawrence, Director Pat Kelly, the Minneapolis VA Healthcare System, Commissioner Larry Herkey, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and finally, Minnesota's Adjutant General, Major General John Jensen. Please join us next week as we talk about veterans' education and employment benefits and hear the story of a local Gold Star family. That's coming up next weekend on this station or online anytime at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. I'm Tom Lyons, and I hope that you make a difference in someone's life this week.
Minnesota Military Radio is a production of iHeartMedia, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, the Minneapolis VA, Beyond the Yellow Ribbon, and the Minnesota National Guard. Your host is Tom Lyons, founder and owner of Phelan Partners Limited, a merger and acquisition advisory firm. Tom is a life member of the American Legion, VFW, Vietnam Veterans of America, and the DAV. For podcasts and the latest updates, follow us at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com.